Mr. Jeffrey on here with another exciting episode of our Advanced Placement World History Podcast. This is episode 10. On today's podcast, we will be discussing the history of Greece, including the Hellenistic Empire of Alexander. If at the end of this podcast you have any questions, please submit them. There are two ways to submit questions, including calling the show's Google Voice number, which is 321-804-APWH. That's one way. Or the other way is by sending your question in an email to mrjeffreyon@gmail.com. Please remember to include your name along with your question in the email. All questions will be answered in an upcoming podcast for the benefit of not just one person, but everyone. Now, we aren't going to go into great detail on Greek society. For that, I would recommend Chapter 10 of Bentley and Ziegler's book, Traditions and Encounters. The Greeks, like all people, were products of their environment. In this case, the Mediterranean Sea and the Pindus mountain range, along with the rocky islands of the Aegean. This rocky landscape was less than ideal for establishing strong central rule. That wouldn't come later on until Alexander of Macedon. And instead, it resulted in the formation of city-states we call poli. These city-states, much like the early Sumerian city-states, operated autonomously with their own leaders and own forms of government. Therefore, although we think of Greece as a civilization unto itself, the various poli usually did not trust one another and would often take up arms against each other in warfare. However, there was something to being Greek, or Hellas, as they might say. These were a seafaring society based on trade. The Greeks established a trading network throughout the Mediterranean. Also, religion was a common thread between the poli, as all of them were polytheistic and worshipped the same pantheon of gods headed by Zeus. The sense of unity brought on by trade, along with a common religious worldview, would lead to pan-Hellenistic events such as the Olympic Games. These games were for the Greeks and the Greeks only. It would seem then that the Greeks, regardless of poli, recognized that they were of a common identity. Later, this idea of pan-Hellenism would lead to alliances between the various poli to fight the Persians. But what is the root of Greek society? For that, we must look to the Minoans. Minoan society began during the 3rd millennium BCE on the island of Crete. During the time period 2200 BCE to 1450 BCE. The Minoan society flourished as a center of commerce. The Minoans were the first society in Greece to have a form of writing, which they called, or we call rather, Linear A. Although we cannot decipher Linear A, we do know it was written on slabs of damp clay and was used to create tally cards for goods. Minoans did have contact with Egyptians and Phoenicians due to a trading network. Minoan society began to falter due to foreign domination and ended around 1100 BCE. Minoan society was followed by the Mycenaean society, named after Mycenae, an important city for their civilization. Mycenaeans were influenced not only by Minoan society, but also by Egyptians and Phoenicians. For example, Mycenaean writing, known as Linear B, was based off of Linear A, Minoans' writing form. Mycenaeans were characterized by their warlike actions. They created stone fortresses in the Peloponnesus to protect their agricultural settlements, in addition to taking control of Anatolia, Sicily, and Italy. They were constantly fighting one another, which led to the creation of poli, or city-states. This means the poli are all of a common society because they share the same culture, language, and the majority of their traditions. However, they are set apart by their social and political structures. Now, you aren't going to have to learn the name of every poli, but there are two major ones we are going to discuss, which I believe you're probably familiar with due to hearing information in a previous history class or from watching movies. The two major poli of the Mycenaean society were Athens and Sparta. Sparta was a major military state in Greece ruled by an oligarchy, or council. In addition to this council, Sparta's executive offices included two kings. All boys in Sparta received military training. At the age of 7,
Boys were taken from their families to be trained at the Spartan Military School, or Agoge. Men were allowed to marry, but they could not live at home with their wife and family until the age of 30, because they were busy being professional soldiers. So, why did Sparta have such a large military, and why was it the sole focus for Spartan men? During the 8th and 7th century BCE, Sparta began subjugating neighboring people called Helots. The Helots were enslaved by the Spartans to work in their fields growing grain. By the 6th century BCE, the Helots outnumbered the Spartans. The Spartans were concerned that the Helots would rebel, so they created a strong military state and discouraged social interaction with the Helots. The one word to remember when describing the Spartans is austere. Austere means severe or strict in manner, attitude, or appearance. Spartans certainly met all of the necessary criteria for austerity.
While Sparta was a military state, Athens was a democracy. Democracy was a brand new concept brought on by an aristocrat named Solon during the Greek Age, in which citizens were allowed to vote on issues by tossing either a black or white pebble into a bag. A white pebble was a yes vote, a black pebble a no vote. Athenian citizens voted on every issue from taxes to whether or not to go to war. Now, by citizens, I don't mean everyone who lived in Athens. Citizens were free adult males. This means women, foreigners, and slaves did not have the power to vote on issues. Later, Pericles, the most popular democratic leader of Athens, oversaw major public works projects such as the Parthenon and expanded maritime trade in goods such as olive oil. The time period in which Pericles ruled was called the Golden Age of Pericles because under his power, Athens reached its height in terms of art and learning. But before we get into the Golden Age of Athens, we need to briefly discuss something that happened well before democracy was a twinkle in Solon's eye, the Persian Wars. In 500 BCE, Greeks began their fight against the Persians. Greeks, under Persian rule on the Ionian coast, rebelled against the great classical empire. In support of their Hellenian brethren, Athens sent ships to assist Ionic Greeks against the Persians. However, Darius crushed the Greek rebellions in 493 BCE and made a move against Athens to teach them a lesson. This didn't work out for him, as Darius and the Persians suffered a defeat at the Battle of Marathon in 490 BCE. Athens was victorious, but Persia held a grudge. Darius's son, Xerxes, attempted to avenge his father's loss and landed on Greek shores with the intent to march through Athens. Xerxes' force of 100,000 men were met by 4,300 Greeks, including 300 Spartans at Thermopylae. While the Persian army eventually wore down the small force, it cost them 20,000 of their own. Ultimately, the Persians would be defeated by the Athenian navy at the Battle of Salamis in 480 BCE and retreated back to Anatolia. This is significant because if the Persians had won, democracy and the tradition of Athenian art and learning may have never developed. During Athens' Golden Age, the foundations of Western philosophy developed under great thinkers such as Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle. The word philosophy comes from the Greek terms philos, meaning love, and sophie, meaning knowledge. Thus, a philosopher is one who loves knowledge. Socrates is considered the father of Western thought and felt the unexamined life is not worth living. Unfortunately for Socrates, the leaders of Athens disagreed with some of his observations that undermined the Greek religion, and Socrates was sentenced to death by poison for corrupting the youth of Athens. Socrates' most famous student was Plato. He wrote many books, including The Republic. He believed the ideal government would be run by a philosopher king. Plato's most famous student was Aristotle. He created rules of logic in which philosophy would be based on observation. Later, the works of Aristotle would contribute to the foundation of what would later be called science. Aristotle's most famous pupil is not known for being a philosopher at all, but rather a conqueror. Alexander of Macedon, or Alexander the Great. More on him later. As mentioned earlier, when the Poli were not allied to fight a common enemy, they often ended up fighting each other. This would hold true at the end of the Persian Wars, as the Poli were splintered into two sides, the Delian League, led by Athens, or the Peloponnesian League, headed by Sparta. Tensions between these two sides eventually erupted into the Peloponnesian War, which would end in 404 BCE when Athens surrendered, bringing an end to the Athenian Golden Age. After the Peloponnesian War, the Poli were unable to unify and thus were easily broken when a neighboring kingdom in northern Greece named Macedonia developed imperial ambitions under Philip II. Philip of Macedon died shortly after conquering all of Greece, but his dream of empire did not die with him. That dream, along with one of the best-trained and best-equipped militaries of the age, was inherited by his son, Alexander. Lord Acton, a British historian, is quoted as saying, "All great men are bad men." This is true of many of the movers and shakers in history: Julius Caesar, Genghis Khan, and of course, Alexander the Great. Now, you are all aware that Alexander was a student of Aristotle, a learned man, but this does not speak to his duality. It is said that Alexander slept with two items under his pillow, a copy of the Iliad and a dagger. I can think of no better example to illustrate both his love of Greek culture and his violent nature. Alexander was ruthless as he chipped away at the Persian Empire, conquering Anatolia, Egypt, Mesopotamia, and even the Persian capital of Persepolis, which he burned to the ground in a drunken stupor. After conquering Persepolis, Alexander controlled the entire Persian Empire. Most world history students don't hear much about the Persians except in how they interacted with the Greeks, but they were a great civilization with complex culture and advanced cities. Indeed, Alexander became great by conquering the Persians. He spread Greek culture and philosophy throughout the Mediterranean and blended it with Persian traditions to create something new. Greek philosophy developed further to form new schools of thought, such as Epicureans, who saw pleasure as the greatest good, and skeptics, who doubted the possibility of certainty in anything, and Stoics, who emphasized inner peace through the control of emotions and living virtuous lives. Alexander's empire became larger and larger until in 327 BCE, his army refused to go any further than the Indus River. On his deathbed in 323 BCE, at the age of 33, Alexander was asked to whom he would leave his vast empire. He responded, "To the strongest." With no clear heir, Alexander's empire was split by his generals into three empires, otherwise known as the Hellenistic Empires. The three Hellenistic empires were the Antigonid, made up of Greece and Macedon, the Ptolemaic in Egypt, and Seleucid in Persia. Not to backtrack, but themes we should always look at when examining any society are social classes and gender roles. Greek society, like most societies reliant on agriculture, included slavery. Slaves were private chattel. In other words, they were property of their owners. The role of most slaves was to cultivate the land, but some worked as domestic servants. Slaves who were educated had the opportunity to one day work for a business and even earn an income, which in turn they could use to buy their freedom. Generally speaking, the Greek poli were patriarchal, but the amount of freedom women had could vary from one class to another or even among poli. It should be no surprise that wealthy women from the upper classes could hold considerable influence based on the position of their husbands, not to mention the influence they would hold over their husbands. Having said that, women were often married off at a young age, typically in their mid-teens, to much older men, usually men in their 30s, and were expected to obey their husbands. In most poli, there were little opportunities for women. There were women priestesses, but no other public positions were offered to them. Compared to the other poli, the women of Sparta had the most freedom. Since men were concerned with matters of a militaristic nature, consequently, the women of Sparta could own land, operate businesses, and even divorce their husbands. Women of Sparta even married later than the other poli, often in their late teens or early 20s. That's our show for today. Tune in next time when we discuss the Roman age of the Mediterranean world. Until next time, this has been Mr. Jeffreyon's World History Podcast.